time for Hype and Nonsense. As live as they want to be from California, here's Sean and Jen.
Wow, it's a fun show already.
Lots of technical difficulties, but, you know, that's never stopped us before entirely.
Pay no attention to the voice on the other side of the room. Everything's fine. Everything's normal. It's all great. It's always been great. It's been wonderful. We're so glad you're here. It's going to be a program starting in, like, less than a minute. Welcome to Hyper Nonsense, where the podcast comes to you straight from the heart of California. How are you doing tonight, Jen?
I'm okay. I'm kind of sick, so my voice is probably not the greatest, but I'm here and I'm podcasting.
I have kind of just had my whole world turned upside down since the last show because my trusted, my favorite set of Yamaha headphones broke in a way that I couldn't really fix them. So I'm using a new set of headphones, or cans, as we say in the biz. And the thing is, you know, people think, oh, headphones are just headphones. Well, I'm here to tell you, they ain't all made equally. And I got these Tascam phones, and they're not bad, but their profile is a little different. Not really sure I like them, but they're all I got for right now, so I'm making do. But at least when we had our little problem at the beginning of the show, you could hear it too, because I went, oh my god. Because what happened is we went to roll our intro song, and it sounded
sounded underwater, you know, kind of muddy.
Well, the bass was just through the roof on the thing, and while, some shows may be all about that bass. We're sort of about that bass. And I went, oh my god, these headphones are insane. I can't use these. And then you could hear it too, so...
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it was just like, okay, well, we're... It's just gonna, you know, have to twiddle some knobs and all that kind of business, and we got it back to more of a reasonable... Really, what this whole exercise has shown me is that we just need to buy all new gear.
No, we can't do that
right now.
It's
obvious to me.
No, 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 no. No, no, no.
So anyway, without any further ado, I want to introduce our first guest of the year. And we'd like to welcome our friend Nathan to the show. Nathan, say hello.
Technical difficulties again.
Did I mute it?
I don't know.
Hey, Nathan, could you try again to say hello?
Hi, guys.
There we are. Hi, Nathan.
Hi.
Yeah, this is what happens when, you know, I mute the channel and turn it all the way down, because those are two things you don't actually need to do at the same time, but I did them both. So anyway, how are you tonight, Nathan?
Doing all right.
Well, thanks for joining us, our first guest of 2015, and really our second guest overall since the
reboot,
the valiant return of our show. I'm announcing this now with a minor bit of hesitance, but I'm going to say that one thing that we want to do in going forward with the show is we want to have a guest on once a month. And I don't know if we'll blow it up beyond that, but I'm just going to aim for once a month. And I've actually got a short list of people who have expressed interest, or I'm interested in asking. So, but we're super happy to have Nathan here as our first guest of the year. So welcome to you, Nathan.
Thanks. It's great to be on.
So I feel like before we start up a major convo with Nathan, we do need to wrap up some business that's been hanging from the last show. Now, it's been a couple weeks since we did a show. We had kind of planned to do one last week, but just kind of everything and going on kind of interfered with that. But I think the big story that we left everyone with at the end of the last show is our water heater situation. And really where it had been left is that on, you know, we recorded that show on a Monday, and the Friday prior to was when we discovered we had no hot water. And then, you know, the following Saturday, I went outside, looked at the water heater, found out it was leaking and that the pilot light was absolutely definitely out, so not working. And I called the handyman, and, you know, I didn't expect to hear back from him over the weekend, and I didn't hear back from him on Monday, and I called him again Tuesday morning, and I left a message and said, you know, I'm not trying to be pushy, but if I don't hear back from you by 1 o'clock today, I got to start making calls. And about an hour or two later, he calls me back and says, you know, I'm sorry, I was out of town, you know, totally fine, not a big deal. And I explained to him the problem, and he says, well, I think that this is beyond my depth, so you should probably call a plumber. So I start making calls to plumbers, and throughout the course of the day, I speak to three different plumbing companies, and I get a price range for doing the whole job. This is bringing a new water heater in, pulling the old one, putting the new one in, taking the old one away. The ranges that I got ran from $9 to $1,500. So, you know, $900 being obviously the low end of the spectrum. And at that moment, you know, that day when I talked to all these different contractors, I had, you know, we had, if we liquefied every penny, you know, every last thing we could convert into one pool of cash, we would have had everything okay over there, Nathan?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
That's okay. We just want to make sure you're all right over there.
We might have been able to come up with $500, and that would have left us really broke with no money at all. And I was talking to my mom and my sister, and they both said, well, you know, we have
Speaking of your mom and your sister, the phone's ringing. It might be one of them.
Yeah, it was my mom, and
yeah,
she
there
can
we are.
Go to voicemail
yeah.
for now. But, you know, they said, oh, you know, we have Home Depot cards. We could put it on. And I'm just like, well, you know, I want to see what my other options are before I resort to, you know, people putting this on credit. And oddly enough, the highest quote that I got out of that range was actually from Home Depot, which really surprised me. You know, I got a $900 bid from a local plumber, a $1,205 bid from another local plumber, and then I called Home Depot Home Services, and, you know, they did a whole thing on me. And they also, in this case, farmed it out. You know, they subcontracted with another local company, and they came in at the $1,500 rate, which surprised me. I figured they at least wouldn't be that much higher than anybody else. But anyway, I just kind of went, well, this is not something we can make a decision on today. And having really no other options, I went and I threw up a page on GoFundMe, just kind of figuring, I don't know, we have nothing to lose, and maybe this thing will get some traction and we'll at least get enough money to, you know, make it plausible. And I put a goal on there of $1,000 because I figured if we raised even close to that, you know, we could cover the rest one way or another. And that night, our neighbor tells me, oh, you should check in with this. There's a local organization here called Cap Slow. It's Community Action Partnership, San Luis Obispo. They have a lot of programs, assistance programs for all kinds of people in need, low income, no income. They do a lot of work with like the homeless shelters and stuff here. And she said, you know, you should check with them. They have an energy assistance program. They might have something you can do. So that was, you know, Tuesday night. So Wednesday I called them. The first woman I talked to says, I need you to get together all these different papers. We need to have proof from the gas company that the water heater's dead. And I called them, and a few hours later, they sent somebody out. I got a tag.
Yeah, that was quick. That was really fast. The gas company guy was like, here I am. You know, yeah, right away, I figured we'd be waiting forever, but he was just right there and went out and went, yeah, that's dead. You know?
Yeah, I called the gas company probably around 11 in the morning, somewhere in there. And the customer service rep I talked to said, well, we'll definitely have somebody out today, but it could be, we guarantee it'll be by the end of the day, but it could be as late as 8 o'clock at night.
Which would have been fine, you know.
Sure.
We just were like, okay, great, cool.
And I would say about maybe 2-3 hours later, the guy showed up. You know, he inspected it real quick, tried to light it. It wouldn't light. And he said, okay, this thing's definitely dead. And I'm going to write on here that the plumbing leak just caused the chamber inside to flood, and that killed your pilot, and it's gone. He tagged it, gave us everything we needed. I called the Capsule back, and they said, okay, well, we're going to send a representative out to your place, and she'll be there within an hour, which I'm figuring, just because I'm used to dealing with, and Camp Slow is a nonprofit organization. They are not a government thing, though they work very closely with a lot of government agencies. They're not an actual government thing. They're not like social services or whatever. So I'm figuring, okay, well, you know, we'll probably have a big long thing we've got to go through with them, and a big song and dance we'll have to do, and you know, 2 or 3 weeks will go by before we'll get an answer. And she comes out, you know, that afternoon, looks at the water heater, sees the tag from the gas company, and looks at it and can see that it's clearly done. It's not usable anymore. It's not fixable. So she comes inside, and she fills out some papers. We signed a bunch of papers.
And she started telling us more about the energy program we qualified for, you know, she's like, well, and she went through the house and she looked at all the appliances and she looked at the lights and to see if they were energy efficient or not. And she looked at the doors and said, well, these could be weather stripped. They can do that. And I'm going to put all this down. And, you know, she like helped us out with a lot more than the water heater. And that was unexpected. That was really good.
Yeah, they have, as part of their whole program, all these other things that they do. And you can't really pick and choose. You kind of take the whole thing or you take none of it. And we were fine with the whole thing. So we signed a bunch of papers. We give her some documents and she hands us some literature to read. And she says, okay, give us a week. And if nobody calls you, call us and specifically talk to this person here. And I said, okay, cool. And, you know, in the meantime, the GoFundMe is up there. It's rolling a little bit. We've had a few donations come in, and that was great.
Right. And in the meantime, I'm thinking, okay, she filled out all the paperwork. Does that mean we've qualified? Or is there some other person going to check it? You know, I'm kind of like skeptical at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been through it or the ringer so many times with these various organizations that, to me, there's no guarantee until the thing is done. And I just kind of went, okay, well, I'm going to let all this stuff just kind of float out in the universe and we'll see where it goes. So a few days later, I think this was on maybe Friday or Saturday, I noticed that we'd gotten a few more donations. And one of the names on there, you know, I'm figuring most of the names I'm going to see, most of the names up to that point were names that I'd recognized. And I noticed that Todd Cochran of, you know, Geek News Central, Raw Voice, someone that
Podcaster
Jen and I,
News, Podcaster show, News,
someone that Jen and I both work for, mm-hmm. in a freelance sense.
I've been writing for him since 2012.
So, you know, he had made a donation, incredibly generous. And I sent him an email and I said, hey, thanks. We really appreciate it. And he said, yeah, no problem. I'm going to actually mention this on my next show, which he was going to record on Monday. And I said, that's really generous. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, because he's really big about, you know, he'll call the people listening to his show, you know, his Ohana, which means family. He's in Hawaii.
Hawaii, yeah.
And he means it. He really means it. This is not just hype. This is not just, oh, I love you all. Listen to my show. He means it. He really does feel like everyone is family and everyone is, you know, someone you should help out if you can. I mean, he's a really good guy as far as that. And it's not just hype. He's very real. And so it was when he said he was going to do it, we knew he would. And he did. He followed through. And that was extraordinarily nice of him to do.
Well, and indeed, on Monday night of this week, he talked about our campaign on a show. And his promise was that anyone from his audience who donated to our fund and then sort of forwarded the email to his, he has like an assistant, he would then match the fund, you know, anything that anyone else donated, he would match dollar for dollar, which again is like amazingly generous.
Yeah, that was really unexpected. It was very nice of him. And you know, if you listen to his show where he talks about it, he himself has experienced having no hot water, and I think that makes you really relate. There's nothing like that.
We'll link to actually the last two episodes of Geek News Central if anybody wants to hear him talk about that. But the what I noticed after that, we sort of referred to this as the Todd effect, because I noticed on Monday night, Tuesday, Wednesday, we started to get donations from people that we didn't know personally, and I figured that had to be because of him promoting it. And then Tuesday, I got a call from Capslow, and it wasn't even a matter of, okay, we need you to come in and fill out 99 more forms, or we need, you know, the last 5 years of your tax returns or whatever. It was just, we can come out tomorrow. Are you going to be home at 8:30 a.m.? And I said, absolutely. And they came out.
And it was two guys, and they like went through the house and just... The one guy went and started working on the water heater right away, and the other guy came in and started changing out some of the lights and light bulbs, and he gave us the proper amount of smoke alarms and
carbon monoxide detectors.
We didn't have any of those before. Weatherized the door. Well, the other guy came in with that was doing the water heater, came in and weatherized the doors. And they just like went through, and they were the nicest people ever, and friendly and helpful and skilled, and they were very quick.
Yeah. It was pretty amazing, and you know, by Wednesday afternoon, I was certain. I knew within a 99 percentile of certainty that this was going to happen with them, you know, helping us with the water heater, because they'd pretty much installed it by then. So I went on the GoFundMe page and I said, okay, we're with the money we've raised and the assistance from Capslow, we're no longer in need of donations. And I'm going to close this down, because I felt at that point that we didn't need to take anyone else's money for something that was already taken care of.
Right. Well, we knew at that point it was they're here, they're fixing it. There's no doubt that this is getting resolved.
Yeah. Because this is the thing. If they had not come through, we would not have been able to afford it without the GoFundMe. So it was like, okay, this is done. And I feel like, you know, the honorable thing is to say, hey, we're good, it's taken care of. So I closed down the donations, and you know, they did the install. To make a long story short, there was a part missing for the water heater that they were supposed to get with the water heater. It wasn't there.
It was sealed. Like it came from the factory in a box, and there was no way they could know that the part wasn't in there until they opened it up and all that. But they went ahead and made arrangements to get a part. They didn't leave that on us. I mean, went and got that resolved, and they were hoping it would come. There was someone that was going to bring it, you know, and they were hoping that it would work out, that guy could get there, you know, the same day they were doing all the stuff, but he couldn't. So the one guy who was primarily working on the water heater said, well, you know what, I'm going to get this part, and I'm going to come in tomorrow and just come over and fix it, because the water heater's outside. So, you know, he was just going to come and do it, and he did.
Yeah, and I noticed, you know, Thursday morning, I got up around 9 o'clock-ish, and I was, you know, walking over here to this side of the house where the water heater is, and I could hear him outside doing some stuff. And I wasn't really totally awake yet. I just kind of went back and lay down in bed, and I figured, okay, if anything comes up, they'll come and knock on the door, and I'll just leave them be. And, you know, maybe at the most an hour or so later, they left, and... about 11:30-ish, I kind of sheepishly went over to the kitchen sink and turned on the hot water tap, and there it was, hot water.
Yeah, so. And we should probably mention, too, they changed out the shower heads with more energy-efficient ones. It's all about energy efficiency, and I think part of it is because we're in California. You know?
Well, I think, you know, we've had several of these, well, I don't know, several, a couple now of these... kind of energy audits, because I think what happens is the state passes these laws, you know, they fund all these different programs to try and encourage you know, energy conservation, not just for the environment, but just for, you know, the economy and everything. And the easiest thing to do is to go into, you know, low-income homes, because a lot of times we're the ones that have, you know, we need that kind of weatherization and all that kind of extra stuff. So that's kind of where they start. I don't know if you've got whatever you're, you know, I don't know exactly at what income level those kind of things stop.
But
or
they're
if
probably
there's a
not
way.
Helping the mansions on the hill, you know?
It's unlikely,
it's probably
but
not that.
I think part of the assumption here is that, you know, if you can afford a multi-million dollar home, you're probably doing things like, you know, working with designers that are going to, you know, make your home energy efficient, and they're going to, you know, they're going to take the time to do that kind of stuff. So it was a really great and amazing, and, you know, I meant to do a quick rundown of names of people who contributed, and I'll go dig that up, and we'll do it before the end of the show. Just of people people that I know won't mind if we mention their names on the show, and Nathan, you are one of them, so we owe you
a big thank you.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations on getting that stuff done. Yeah.
It was such a big deal. It was so big. Like, we had like 12 days without hot water, and that was really difficult. I mean, I've lived through that before, but it is not fun.
Yeah, it was such a weird experience because you think, you know, it's just like anything that you take for granted and then it goes away. It's like if your power goes out for 2 hours, you kind of wander around going, what the hell did I, what would I do without electricity? And,
yeah.
But this is and I mean, there's things you can do to kind of navigate around not having a water heater or not having, you know, sort of running hot water, but they're not really sustainable for long periods. You know, like I would challenge anybody to just heat up enough hot water on your stove to fill your sink to wash your dishes. It takes more water than you probably think.
Right.
And forget trying to do things like take a bath in kind of a modern bathtub.
You can't. I was like trying to make do with like 2 inches of water, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you...
I felt like a cockatiel trying to take a bath in a little bird dish, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really weird. I mean, you think about, you know, my mom was talking about how, I mean, she grew up in... You know, she grew up in the South, and she was effectively the daughter of kind of migrant farm workers. And, you know, she said that she lived for periods of her time with no indoor plumbing. And, you know, what they would do when they needed to take baths is they had a big, you know, a big round tub that they would fill. You know, they would heat up water on the stove and top it off with cold water. And, you know, everybody would, much like we described on the last show, you know, everybody would get in and take a turn in the bath. And that is at least functional if you have that kind of circular basin. The problem with modern bathtubs is they're horizontal, and it would take forever to try to fill it up with enough water that you could really take a proper bath. So anyway, we're super grateful for that, and you know, we do want to thank everybody that contributed. And
I want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
We went and purchased a camping shower.
Oh,
from a sports store, right? Because, you know, we were desperate, okay? And
yeah, the stories worth telling.
The way this works is it's essentially...
Let me explain it, because I used it.
I didn't use it. Because it didn't turn out to be something two people could use one after the other. So
yeah. It's a... I'm sure for its intended purpose, which is as a camping shower, it's probably really great, but as a replacement for indoor plumbing, it's really not. I thought maybe it might be, and in some cases it was better than nothing, but to explain real quick, this is a bag, a big heavy bag, and it's got essentially a solar panel on the front, and you fill it with water, and you leave it out in the sun, and the sun heats up the water, and then it's got a little hose on the end with a shower head. And this all works under gravity. There's no pump or anything in there. There's no way to really, you know, your control for the flow of the water is you move the shower head down past a certain point, gravity takes over, water comes out. And when I first, it was actually a Facebook friend of mine who suggested, hey, maybe you could try this. And we found one for $20. I figured it was worth a shot, maybe it would be great. And the first thing I tried to do was actually to fill it with warm water that I heated up inside. And the problem with that is you've got this opening at the top that is really designed, if you're going to fill it from, say, a hose or a faucet tap. And it was almost like what I was doing is I was, you know, heating up a pot of water on the stove, and I was taking a small cup and just kind of, you know, dipping the cup into the pot, and then pouring the water into the bag, which was super slow and inefficient. And then the next day, and what I discovered is, to really get anything close to a proper shower, you've got to fill the bag all the way up. Like, it said somewhere, I thought it said that one full bag would allow you to take 3 to 4 showers. No.
No, that's not true.
No way.
We found out that was overly optimistic.
So, like, the first couple times I used it, working under that assumption, you know, I only filled it up maybe a third of the way, half of the way, and I would get to a point where, you know, I had kind of gotten lathered up with soap, and then I ran out of water, so
right.
That's not useful. So then I figured, okay, I got to fill it up all the way. And the problem I was running into after that was, well, first of all, it would take forever to fill up, and then it had to be in, like, a really sweet spot where the sun was hitting it directly. Like, ambient sunlight wasn't going to work. So the last couple times I used it, it wasn't, like, super sunny here. So I didn't really get any warm water out of it. I just got kind of less than
freezing
tap water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and what I did was I took it into our bathroom, and I hung it on the pipe, that our shower head is connected to. And I just kind of stood there and, you know, pulled the little shower head down and, you know, used it as best as I could. You really need to have it to really use it effectively. You need to have it up
above you.
You know, I'm 5'9", so you'd really need it to be probably hanging at about a 6-foot level. And then kind of what you do is you pull the shower head down and you get yourself as wet as you can wherever you need to. And then you put the shower head up so the water stops coming out, and you do everything you need to, and then you kind of rinse yourself off. And I mean, it's like it reminded me of something I would almost expect to see on a show like Hoarders, when they've gotten to the point where the indoor plumbing doesn't work anymore. Like, I felt like
yeah,
it was just such a weird experience. And I mean, it wasn't horrible, but by no means was it a replacement for good working plumbing. And another thing that happened is, when the gas company came out, rightfully so, they turned off the water supply to the water heater because it was leaking and we were just wasting water. And because of the way the plumbing is set in our house, that actually killed the water flow to the showers,
the bathtub, and the hot water in the sinks as well.
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah. The hot water was gone from the time the hot water heater stopped.
But, right, but I mean, you could turn on the hot water in, this, like, say, the bathroom sink, and nothing was coming through.
Well,
but it was the cold water.
You went and you just said, which I did once, if you just said, to hell with it, I'm going to take a, but before the water heater got completely turned off, if you just said, to hell with it, I'm going to manage with a cold shower, you could turn the shower on and get cold water.
Right, but after that, nothing was coming through. So, but I mentioned the camp shower because that was kind of a unique solution that we tried. And also because, you know, you had it out on the porch, so it would hopefully get some sun. And so when the guys came to check it out, they came through the house and they went out, oh, okay, the water heater's out back, go out the back door, cool. You know, so they went out and ran into them. They're like, what is this? And we're like, oh, it's a camping shower. And they're like, are you going camping? I'm like, no, we were using because we had no hot water. And they were like, oh, like, good idea. Idea, you know, like, nobody's done that before, apparently.
I think if you were actually camping and you could take one of these and you could hang it up in a proper place where it got a lot of direct sun, then it would probably be amazing in that environment. I'm hoping that for the duration of my life, I never have to use one again, because camping ain't a thing that I do.
And I can't.
And
I can't
hope that I never, you know, go through another area, another part of my life where I'm, you know, so bad off for hot water that I need to resort to that. So anyway, we've told the story. Enough about that. It's by far the most majorist of things that has happened since our last program. So let's talk to Nathan, because Nathan is our guest, and we've talked about ourselves for
the last half hour. Yeah,
so sorry, enough,
Nathan.
Enough about that. But I think we needed to finish off that story. So,
Yes, I was waiting to hear it too. So.
Oh, good. Right. Okay, you weren't bored. That's nice.
Okay, so let's talk about a few things. So, Nathan, obviously, you and Jen were co-hosts of the Halfway Around the World Music Podcast, and you guys wrapped that up about what, a month and a half ago.
Month,
but yeah,
it was middle of December,
right? Mm-hmm.
And how are you both feeling about putting that to bed?
Well, I've started doing my App a Day show in its place, and I'm trying to be more consistent with that. I've done 5 weeks in a row.
Awesome.
That's good.
And also, and just through all that time, I've collected such a lot of music that I love. And so I have that on my playlist rotation in the car.
Oh, that's
excellent.
Good. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm... I kind of felt like the timing was right for us to end the show.
Yeah, especially with Deuce stopping at the same time.
Right. Deuce Management is where we got a lot of our music from. And right before, you know, Nathan and I had made the decision, okay, we are going to end the show at the end of this season. And we knew roughly when the end of the season would be, assuming, you know, we didn't have to skip a show for reasons beyond our control. And we got the email from Deuce saying, hey, you know, we're done. We're not going to do music. We're not going to send out music, and we're not going to represent artists anymore. And everything's been great. And thanks for everything. You know, that kind of email. And it was right at the same time. It was right at the same timing. So that kind of went, okay, maybe it is time to be done. But in addition to that, the previous season we thought might have been the last one, because we were hoping that, you know, Nathan was trying to find a teaching job. And of course, that takes, if you teach, that takes all your time, you know? And it didn't pan out. So no. We did the next season. And I feel personally that I was struggling this entire last season. I mean, I had neighbors doing strange things with, like, with, you know, they were cutting down trees, they were knocking down buildings, you know, they were causing all this noise and making me ill. And my health is not as good as it used to be. I'm not dying. I'm just, you know, it's chronic illness junk. And I felt like I was struggling. And I know there was at least two episodes where Nathan and Sean did the show instead of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of feel like, you know, at the time I was doing Halfway Around the World, I'm doing Hyper Nonsense, I'm doing Shattered Soulstone, and I'm contributing to the Podcaster News podcast. And that's a lot. So I don't miss doing the show. I miss talking with Nathan about music and other stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm...
same here.
You know, I'm glad that the show is done, just in the sense that I think it was time. I think you guys have done everything in that format that you could do, and I could tell that just the process was taking a certain amount of toll on Jen's energy. And, you know, when I got pulled in, which I don't mind, you know, but when I got pulled in twice to do the show, I kind of went, okay, this is pretty clear that the steam is starting to slide here out of this engine. So, so tell us, Nathan, about your App a Day podcast. Now, you've been doing this for, what, 4 years?
I started it in 2009.
Yeah, and you started it as in
NAPOD Pomo Project, yeah. National Podcast Post Month. And so what turned into 30 days in a row, I decided to keep it going. And for a long time, I just did, like the show says, one app a day. And then I experimented with five apps once a week for a little bit. Then I went back to an app a day again. And now I think it's just too much to do something every day. So I'm just going to... I think I can be more consistent doing it once a week.
Well, I listened to it, and I think that the once a week format is a lot better, only because it gives you the opportunity to do things a little more long form, and then, you know, you can do these comparisons where you'll take...
Themes, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you'll take a group of similar apps and... So, you know, compare them and not necessarily, you know, put them in order, but you can kind of say what the differences are, the similarities, and what you like better or worse about them. And that is actually, I think, a pretty handy resource. And your focus is on iOS and or Mac apps, both, right?
Mainly iOS, iPhone and iPad.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I'm a big fan of that, and I've discovered through listening to it a lot of cool apps. You know, my problem is that I'm so, you know, I really approach software regardless of the platform in kind of a very, I don't know, pragmatic way, just in the sense of I'm not a big one for testing things out. I tend to kind of go, okay, I feel like I have a problem. Can software solve it? And then what are my options from there? I'm not a big one for just kind of testing things out. And
mainly what I get my apps from is either blogs that I read on iMore or Macworld or things like that, or I watch iPad Today on Twit and get a lot of ideas from that, and also i5 for the iPhone on Twit, and so I like that kind of stuff too. And I belong to a couple Mac and Apple related user groups in the area. One that I'm president of since 2007 here in San Antonio, and another one in Austin that's a whole lot bigger, and they always have great presentations that I try to go to once a month if the topic's interesting. But Austin's like an hour and a half away, so it really has to be something I want to go to.
Yeah. And if you were going to, I'm just going to ask you just off the top of your head, as far as iOS is concerned, just give me, you know, give me five apps that you feel like you could, at this point in your life, you couldn't live without.
Well, right off the top of my head, Downcast. That's my podcast app of choice. And that's probably the one I use the most. A game that I play every single day, and ever since it came out, I've just been addicted to it, is a game called Bonza. And it's kind of a crossword type of game where you have all these little different snippets of a couple letters, and you have a theme. Like today's was kind of weird. There's a free game of the day, and like one day they had stuff on all words associated with beekeeping. Today was all the different countries with Stan in it, like Uzbekistan.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
All right.
And just a lot of crazy puzzles, word puzzles. I like word games. I always play hanging with friends with my mom. And then,
well, how come you're not playing hanging with friends with me then, Nathan?
Because he's playing with his mom. That's why.
What, you can only have one game at a time? I love hanging with friends.
And no, she does about five games.
Okay. Well, no, I understand that. I actually really love hanging with friends, and it seems like it goes through these cycles where I'll get like three people playing with me, and then, you know, months will go by and I can't get anybody to play. So,
and on the iPad, I'm always looking at Mr. Reader, which is an RSS feed reader.
That is one of the apps that I learned of through you, Nathan, because, you know, I'm again talking about how I sort of approach all this stuff, you know, the kind of the pragmatic view. And obviously, what was the one before they killed the Google's Reader? Was that Reader, R-E-D-E-R? Was that the one?
Yeah, I'm still using Reader on the Mac.
Yeah, I'm using ReadKit now.
Yeah.
Because you told me to use it, Nathan.
Well, last year, Reader 2 came out.
Okay.
So,
is it now?
I've always liked it.
Now, with Reader on the Mac, with Reader 2, is that a whole separate app? Would I have to buy it again?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I'll just stick with ReadKit. Because ReadKit is serving my needs. But, you know, it was so weird when Google shut down the Google's Reader, and we were all kind of scrambling going, well, how do we handle RSS feeds? And, you know, thankfully these other solutions have come around. But, you know, I went from using Reader... And I think it was using Reader on the iPad. Was it Reader on the iPad? too?
Yes.
Yeah, I was okay. Yeah, I was using it on both platforms, and then I switched to using ReadKit.
Not
on
sure
the
if
Mac.
It was universal, but
yeah, I was using ReadKit. Now I'm using ReadKit on the Mac, and Mr. Reader on the iPad, and that's working out well. I will say this: I have dramatically over the last 6 months, I think, dramatically cut back on the number of RSS feeds I subscribe to, and I'm not really upset by that. I really hit a point where I just went, you know what, I'm slogging through too much stuff. That was one.
Yeah,
of the,
I sometimes feel that way too, but yeah. I haven't deleted anything.
Yeah, I've hit a point. I've really hit almost kind of a zen point with media where I'm fine with cutting back on it. You know, I at the beginning.
What
of the,
I do if like I have like 1,100 unread mess unread feeds, and
oh, no.
Eventually I'll just say screw it and just do read all or
yeah,
read all.
Yeah,
mark all
yeah,
is right.
I've,
yeah.
I've done that before, and I hit a point where I just kind of went. Again, trying to take a pragmatic approach, I just went, you know what, if I have ignored this much content for this long, that's really just my way of expressing that I'm not that interested in this stuff and I can cut back on it. And every time I've done it, my life has not been affected in the negative. I actually unsubscribed to, like, I don't know, maybe five or six podcasts earlier this month, because I was in this constant state of just never completely running out of podcasts. And I looked at stuff that I thought was just kind of duplicating. I was subscribed to, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 podcasts about podcasting. And when you are subscribed to similar topics like that, you come across a lot of the same information. Yeah. So I just said, I don't need all this. And actually it's been nice because now I can kind of look at, I use Downcast as well. Another app that I learned about from Nathan. And, you know, I look at the unplayed episodes and I go, okay, you know, I can see I've got, you know, whatever it is, 1, 2, 3, 5 unplayed episodes. And that'll kind of guide me through how I'm going to listen. And if I, you know, if I am in a place where I want to listen to something, you know, maybe I'll go and listen to some music instead, which has been great because I'm listening to a lot more music now. I have on Spotify.
Well, speaking of that, one thing I'm struggling with is kind of balancing the podcast with Audible.
Yeah, well, I never got into audiobooks. I don't know. I've never tried it, so I don't know if I would like it, but I've just kind of decided that for now, I'm going to stay away from the audiobooks. But, yeah, I mean, I understand that. You know, it is in so many ways one of these kind of ultimate first world problems where we're kind of going, well, yeah. There's too much
there's
media.
There's too much fun stuff to do.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like, there's too many cool things, mm-hmm. and we can't possibly consume all of them. So now we have to go into these modes of figuring out what's the most important thing. And obviously that's an entirely subjective
yeah.
process.
Yeah.
So I'm going to jump in here for a minute since we're talking about, like, readers. I'm using NetNewsWire.
Yeah.
And I had, like everybody else, a ton of stuff in there that I hadn't looked at because I don't look at it every day. I look at it when I'm chilling out, you know, whatever. And when we switched over, I got, you know, I upgraded a computer to make a long story short, and it lost all of my RSS in there.
Yeah.
So I kind of looked at that and went, okay, you know,
right.
That's all right. And just put in a couple. That's where I'm at
yeah,
with that.
Well,
one.
And I think, you know, one of the drawbacks of living in the cloud as we can now, where we have all of these syncing services, so that if, you know, a device goes down, you know, we don't lose everything. I mean, that's actually a good thing in a lot of ways. But, you know, there's something nice about, you know, about how it was in the old days where you'd get a new computer and, you know, it was such a chore to copy things over from your old machine.
And that, it took forever.
And it took a long time. And you would just kind of go, it would really put you in that mindset of, okay, well, what do I really need to keep? You know, it's kind of like moving. when you move house, you know, you assess everything to the point where you go, do I want this bad enough to wrap it, pack it, carry it out my front door, put it on a truck, and carry it into my other front door? And you discover at that point what you have that you really think you want to keep. So, and now that we have all these syncing services that just kind of hold all this data for us, so when we move, it's just all there again, as convenient as that is, we lose the ability to kind of do that whole, you know, setting up house in your computer again or whatever.
Well, if you've got stuff synced, I mean, like I just have a computer. I don't have like a smartphone.
That's
or
true.
Anything like that. I don't have an iPad. I don't necessarily want one, you know, there's nothing to sync, right? But like iTunes, when it updated, it now looked different than it did before. And with me, if something looks visually different, I have to relearn it. Like it's like I'm starting over. Like I've never used it before. It's just the way it works for me. And, I'm just now trying, I've just now learned how to sort of navigate through where stuff went, because I had a bunch of playlists set up and those were gone. So I'm trying to put them back together now. And part of what I'm doing, like as we're talking about, you know, just getting rid of excess stuff, I've been going through the massive amount of music that I've amassed since, that's a poor sentence. Anyway, since starting to do music podcasting back with Inside My Head in 2007. And there's so much of it that I listen to now and I'm like, you know, I'm not really into that anymore. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen your tweets about weeding your iTunes.
Yeah, I'm still working on that. I haven't gotten very far because I found that I can't do it while I'm working on writing work. I can do it if I'm putting together like a video game blog or something with little screenshots. But if I'm actually writing something, I end up transcribing lyrics and it just doesn't work for me. But
yeah, I can't listen to music and do something else.
It's
yeah,
hard.
I'm the opposite.
I can't do it. I can do it if it's like a video game blog and I'm putting together a screenshot and then kind of saying, here's the thing I want to point out in the screenshot, and that works. But beyond that, I can't yet. I don't know if I'll ever be able to, but I've been deleting songs that, you know, I'm like, I'm not into this, I'm not into that. And if it came from like Deuce Management or various other publicity things, then it, you know, if I delete it, it just disappears. But some of this other stuff I'm finding there, it's going into the cloud. Or it's already in the cloud. Or maybe it's a song I purchased at some point. And it's in the cloud. And I'm like, well, I'm not really interested in this song anymore. And I'm finding it's not letting me delete it. And I've also hit the point where I've got more than five computers that have been connected to the cloud in some way. And it's not going to let me access the cloud anymore unless I go and do something about that. And I'm like, that's just annoying, you know. But my goal is to like really weed down, you know, until like if I don't love the song anymore, I don't really need to keep it. And I'm going to try to go through whatever amount of podcasts I've got scattered out. I had a system where I knew like what I'd listened to and what I hadn't. And then when I changed computers, it just scattered. So I'm starting fresh, going through everything and just, you know, trying not to be a digital hoarder anymore, I guess. You know?
Well, I've been trying to rate everything in iTunes for the last, I don't know how many years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would take a long time too.
I'll tell you, you know, I've had this struggle with digital music libraries, it feels like now for over 10 years, because what would seem to happen is I can remember back when I had a massive, massive CD collection, and I would go through and I would rip all the songs that I would want. And of course this was back when, you know, a 10 gigabyte hard drive was like, you were living in the future, man. And I would look at everything and I'd go, well, I don't want to encode these files to be too large because I don't want to burn through a bunch of hard drive space. And I have, you know, I had hundreds of albums to go through. And then, you know, I would encode everything at like 128 kilobits, you know, MP4 or whatever, which is listenable, but it's not great. And then a few years later, when I had a bigger hard drive, I'd be like, ooh, I should go through and do all this again and you know, rip all these files at a larger rate. And I would kind of start over again and delete everything. And it was a project that I never really finished. And, you know, I'm still kind of battling with that whole thing now. And I'm at the point now where I've, you know, sold off my CD collection. So really I'm listening to things more on streaming services anyway, but you know, that has its own set of downsides, I guess. You know, the thing, I don't know. I mean, let me ask you this, Nathan. Overall, Do you still like iTunes? Do you still think it's a good program, at the very least, for managing a music library? Or do you think it's too big now and too kind of bloated and in the way?
I like it. In fact, I have a hard time getting into Spotify because I unsubscribed for about a month or two, and then in the car, and my wife Amanda says that she's sick of my music, and so she wants to hear some Broadway. So I resubscribed to Spotify for some stuff in the car, and I just hardly ever use it. I mainly just listen to everything in iTunes.
Yeah, I will say that, you know, the music library that I have in there, while I'm still kind of growing it, I guess, at this point, I do appreciate just having the files right there on my computer. And, of course, I can stream them to my iPad or to the Apple TV now, which is super convenient. Though I will say that I don't know, Apple gets on my nerves. Like, the implementation of the home sharing from iTunes to the iPad, it just sometimes it doesn't work, and I don't know why. And I'm willing to chalk it up to it just being me that I'm doing something wrong. But you know, I'm good with a software problem being my fault when, you know, I can replicate the problem and or whatever. And it's just sometimes it's like I feel like I've got to make sure that my iMac is not asleep and that iTunes is open, and then I can go in the other room, go on my iPad, you know, pull up the sharing and then stream the songs, and everything works. But if, like, all of these, you know, conditions aren't right, then it's not going to work. And I feel like there needs to be, because it seems like it works pretty flawlessly on the Apple TV. So I'm willing to chalk this up to just being my problem. But
and I'm probably more of a power user of iTunes, because I make a lot of smart playlists, and
yeah,
I'm kind of tired of iTunes, honestly. As I'm going through my stuff, I'm going, is there something better that's not going to, like, change the way it looks every so often and make me relearn it? You know, like, I don't know if this thing exists, but what I would like is maybe an app or a program I can just stick some songs in and have them sit there and not necessarily disappear into the cloud or get connected to the cloud where I can't access them or whatever. And just, like, stay put and not change the way it looks, you know, dramatically every so often. And I don't know if that exists, but that's what I want.
Yeah, there's probably something out there. I think that's actually a valid criticism, you know, that Jen has. I mean, and I struggle with this too, because, you know, the most recent version of iTunes, I look at it and it's not to me always as intuitive as I would like. And, you know, I've been using it since version one, so there's certain ways I expect it to function that it doesn't necessarily do that anymore. And you know, that kind of thing is annoying for sure. So I do still like it, though, overall, as kind of a music curation, you know, system. But that's really all I want it to do. I don't need it to be, you know, the hub of my digital media life. I don't use it for podcasts anymore. I pretty much rely on Downcast for that now for everything.
But I have been subscribing to Match for the last few years too.
And how do you feel about that?
Well, I don't remember how it was before.
Oh, so you, just, you I've use gotten it so, so much. Used to it.
Okay. It's the only way I can get songs onto the iPhone now. And
well, I think it's a good solution for the problem of having, you know, these massive media libraries and not being able to just port them all around with you everywhere all the time. So I can see a lot of value in that. In my case, you know, my iPad is my one and only mobile device, and it's only 16 gig. So I'm very selective about what I, you know, sync on there as far as music goes. I usually only put a few albums, things that are new. And then I can have those if I'm not home and I really need to listen. You know, if I'm just out, if I'm riding a bus and I run out of podcasts to listen to, I can still have something to listen to. And I do most of my, you know, music listening at home. So like the sharing on the network is sufficient for that. But I understand in so many levels when it comes to this stuff that I am not, as you describe yourself, Nathan, a power user, and that's totally fine. In Jen's case, I think a big part of the problem that she runs into is the fact that her computer
They just changed the design so much.
Well, they changed the design a lot.
That's part of it. Because with me, you know, like, I'm dyslexic, and I don't know if I have other learning disabilities, but if something looks visually different, it's a different color, it's a different, you know, shape, it's in a different location, they moved where to find, you know, folders or whatever on it. I'm starting from scratch as if I've never touched iTunes ever and had no idea what it was. You know, it's like I'm starting over completely as a brand new user, don't know what I'm doing because this is how things work for me. And I'd like it to stop doing that, you know?
Well, and I think another problem that Jen runs into is, you know, she has the way that it's set up on her computer, and you know, I've offered to change this, but anytime Jen opens an audio file, you know, iTunes is the default player, and then what it also does is it copies the file into her iTunes library. So
right, and you know, I guess there's ways around it, but I have so much stuff. Like I've got, like I said, all the music from all the years of music podcasting in there, except what have we did out recently. I've got podcasts I've listened to and wanted to hang on to for some reason at the time made sense. I don't know. I'll go through and see what I think now. But you know, I've actually downloaded, audio, arguments from Supreme Court cases and district court cases because I'm like, I want to know what was said, you know, so that's in there too. It's like, do I need that forever? I don't know. And it's just like, I don't know. I kind of, some of it's interesting to me to keep, but, that's why I downloaded in the first place.
It'll always be on the web. You don't need it. Go ahead.
Yeah. But it's hard to find. Have you ever tried to look up an audio argument?
Nope.
It's difficult. It'll be up there the week after the case, you know, unless it's the Supreme Court when it may take longer. Or sometimes Supreme Court will have it the same day, but it'll be easily accessible for about a week. Maybe a month. And after that, you have to already know when you go in what the name of the case was or the name of the attorneys or exactly what date it was in order to sort through their system and find it. And there's no connective system. You know, the Supreme Court has its own. Each district court has its own. Each appeals court has its own. So it's slightly different interface. It's difficult. So if it's, you know, if there's a court case that you're really interested in, it's easier to just download it than have to search for it every time you want to hear it or every time you want to check something, you know. But in any case, I don't remember where I was going with this other than I have too much stuff and iTunes is not making it easy for me to get rid of stuff or sort stuff or find stuff or keep stuff in a playlist or, you know, all these other things. And I don't like the cloud thing because right now, like I said, I've got it says I've gotten too many computers attached to the cloud. So I'm going to have to go and do something about that if I even want to use the cloud. I don't have any desire to use the cloud, but now some of my music is in it that I can't access, you know, outside of it. So, I mean, I've got to do something if I want to go after that. And I want like a little app that will just play music that I have stuck on my computer somewhere and not have to like connect through, you know, through iTunes. And I don't know if I've been saying iPhones instead of iTunes. I may have been, but,
it's fine.
You know, that kind of thing. Like I said, you know, learning disabilities here, right? So, so I mean, I'm looking for something that could just, you know, that I could use instead of and not have it connect to. And it'll just sit and it'll leave things where I put them.
Yeah. No, I understand that. We'll have to do some research and see what we can find.
Well, I'm
for
looking
you
at an article here right now that's got a few options. And I think there's another one from a couple other tech sites. So there are, at least someone has tried investigating this before.
Yeah.
So it's probably I'll find something.
I know that there's more alternatives to iTunes on the Windows side because, you know, it's not all, you know, iTunes is kind of essential in a lot of ways to the Mac OS, but it's just a thing in Windows. So there's other things. But one of the things that I was going to say is, and Jen kind of alluded to this, that with the way everything is set up, anytime she opens an audio file, it copies into her iTunes. So Mm-hmm. She's got all these, you know, kind of random files that probably have no tags on them.
No tags at all. I've got little pieces of stuff that has to do with some podcast I was involved in at some point between when I started podcasting and today, where, you know, I pulled a sound for somebody that they wanted to use, or I recorded a little snippet for somebody's show, or, you know, that kind of thing. And it's all in there still, you know. And I look at it and I don't know what it is. I'm going to have to play it. And I'm going to go through everything and just get rid of so much of this stuff. But it's going to take a while. And when I get this all sorted, or possibly before I get too far in sorting it, I want something that will just let me put things where I want them and leave them be.
Yeah. You know? Well, we'll see what we can do for you on that front. So overall, we're kind of, we're as a group, we're sort of 2/3 still in favor of iTunes, I guess. So, because it's one of those things that comes up, and I mean, there are, I see people online who just bristle.
And I can help you come up with a smart playlist to automatically sort your stuff. And
I don't know if it will, though, because there's not enough data in the tags. Like, there's no tags, there's no...
Well, I mean, you can, like, for example, you can, if you give it 1 star, it'll automatically go to a 1-star folder, or...
Oh, okay, that might work, but I've never ranked anything, ever. So there's nothing ranked.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I kind of I go back and forth on the rating of songs. This is kind of the way that I've always looked at sort of having a master music library, because even when I was still storing, you know, hundreds of CDs, when I would rip tracks to my iTunes, I would only pull out the songs that I liked, because for as long as I've been listening to music, I mean, going back to, you know, when I was, you know, playing cassettes on my boombox when I was, you know, 9 or 10 years old, I would get an album. If there was a song I liked, I'd get the album. And then I would live with the album for a while and kind of decide what I liked and what I didn't like. And then when I was playing the album back, if a song came on that I didn't care for, I'd skip ahead to the next one. Well, when we got to the digital age, there was no reason for me to rip songs into my iTunes that I didn't want to add, I didn't keep. So kind of my whole philosophy with what I put into iTunes is, would I skip this if it came on shuffle? And I mean in the sense of, this is a song I really don't like, I don't want to hear it, I'm going to skip it. So I haven't really gotten back into rating songs, because I feel like, in a way, all the songs, I mean, obviously some I like better than others, and some I want to hear at times and others I don't, but I feel like they're all kind of, in their own way, 5-star songs. Now, I know that there are people that, you know, they'll buy a whole album and store it in there, and I'm probably weird in that way. And, you know, Nathan, you and I just had a transaction on Twitter where I mentioned about how I was trying to, you know, I wanted to be able to mark certain songs so they wouldn't turn up in a shuffle at all, because, you know, there's songs that are kind of interstitial album tracks, and they sound really weird when they just pop up between two other songs. So, yeah. And I, you know, because I've been using iTunes since the beginning, I just always assumed that feature wasn't there. And then I went on Google and, you know, 2 minutes later I realized, oh yeah, no, there is the ability to go in and mark a song as, you know, skip if you're in shuffle mode. So, and it would only make sense that Apple would think of that, or they would get enough requests for that. But it's just one of those things, I guess. I'm still so like bitter and cynical about using computers for 30 years that I automatically assume that if something makes sense and it would improve my experience, it's not there. Even with the Apple stuff, and Apple, you know, figures this stuff out usually better than anybody else. But my assumption always is, if this seems logical, if it seems rational, if it would be a good thing to add, it won't be there. So, what is your strategy in rating your songs? What are you hoping to achieve with that, Nathan?
Well, first I use an app called Sizzling Keys, and that just lets me, I can just do Control 1, 2, 3, or 4 to rate. Mm-hmm. While it's playing, and then I have a smart playlist, one for poor, fair, good, and really good.
Okay.
And if they go into the poor category, poor or fair, well, mainly poor, I'll delete them.
Okay. Smart.
And so the reason I have so many that, like you said, you have a lot that you've actively put in there. Well, I, 1 year for Christmas, I asked my uncle for, and he gave me all of his iTunes songs on a thumb drive. And so I put them in there, and it just increased my music library by, I don't know, several thousand.
Yeah. Okay.
And a lot of those are like those novelty 50s and 60s songs. I have no.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
and then I also import a lot of collections, like maybe stuff from South by Southwest or.
Yeah. You know, I'm so, I'm like, I kind of like the process I have right now where I kind of, for lack of a better term, I sort of ghettoize songs in Spotify, where I sort of create, I have a playlist in there. It's not public. And I actually call it In Queue. And I just put, it's kind of like this shoebox. You know, it's like this endless inbox of songs. And if I hear something that I like or I'm interested in, and I can find it on Spotify, I'll stick it in there. And then, you know, I try to not let my iTunes become a haven of untested music, because I don't want, you know, in those times when I'm shuffling and I'm really enjoying it. And of course, now I know about the, you know, skip during shuffle thing. So I may that could be a solution for that. But what I don't want is, you know, when I'm just kind of shuffling for my own enjoyment, I don't want to have those songs that I've never heard, you know, pop up in there. So,
and then when I'm looking for calling stuff, I guess, for the iPhone, then I'll usually choose from the really good category.
Yeah, and that's logical. That makes a lot of sense. So how do you feel? Do you have any strategy that you're doing for video as far as like movies or TV shows? Have you gone digital on any of that, or are you still?
Well, I don't really have anything that I own. Well, I do have a lot of DVDs, but I haven't really ripped that much. Mainly nowadays, I'm either using, either renting from iTunes, if it's a newer movie with the Apple TV, using Netflix or Amazon Prime.
Now, on those iTunes rentals, is that something that you can handle completely from within the Apple TV and then it just streams?
I don't even have to do anything on the computer.
Okay. I figured for sure you had to like, you know, download it into iTunes and then you had to, you know, stream it over, but they'll let you just stream it straight from Apple's server to your Apple TV.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's handy. So that's good to know. Cause I've considered that. I mean, you know, we have a local, and actually the other thing right now is as we're sitting here talking, and I know that this may cause Jen to go into a certain level of panic. I don't know. But as we're sitting here talking, we actually don't even have any kind of a DVD player hooked up to our TV, because we were using the Mac Mini, which effectively was replaced by the Apple TV. So even if we wanted to go and rent a DVD,
we'd have to run it through our computer.
Well, possibly if that would work, we could.
Well, yeah, you can AirPlay your computer to the Apple TV.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Kind of what I was thinking, and I haven't tried that yet, but it seems like it would work fine. In which case, it's a totally reasonable solution. It's just I haven't tried it yet, and again, because I'm jaded and cynical and bitter when it comes to this, my assumption is that it'll either work kind of okay, it won't work at all, or I'll have to go into IT commando mode and, you know, hack something together, you know, going, diving deep, you know, into pages of forums, you know, where nerds hang out all day and talk about video codecs, and finally, after, you know, 25 hours of digging, I'll come up with a solution, and then Apple will run an update a week later and it'll break everything.
See, that's the thing with a lot of this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, all of us are, you know, none of us had computers anything like, or an internet anything like it is today when we were children or teenagers, you know? So we, like, grew up with this idea of, I have purchased this music or this DVD or whatever, and it is mine, and it will be here where I put it, and that's it. And now it's like, that's not the case anymore, you know? Sometimes stuff disappears, sometimes, you know, you can't access things, sometimes it's, you know, like we've been talking about this whole episode. And I think that's part of the frustration is, like, yeah, we actually have, you know, experience with, I know where my stuff is at, you know?
Right.
And younger generations probably don't have that experience at all, because they would have grown up with an internet where it was just all there, you know?
Yeah, everything's in the cloud. And,
right, and that's normal to them.
Streaming services.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And a lot of these younger generations spend a lot of their life online for social, too, you know? So it would seem even more natural to, you know, be watching a video,
yeah,
through a stream service, maybe with someone you know across the country who's watching it at the same time, and maybe texting about it or using a chat system to talk about it or something. With us, it was more like, you know, you watched your video when you wanted to, or you had everybody over and watched the video at the same time. And it was, you knew where it was. It was, here's my DVD or my, you know, VHS tape. It's in my hand. I have it, you know. And in a, with that, too, it's like, you know, if you, like, I know at the beginning of this year, Netflix removed a bunch of stuff, right?
Yeah, they do that all the time.
They do it every
year. Removing stuff and adding stuff all the time.
Right, you know, so if there's something there that you love and you figure, okay, well, it's on Netflix, it may not always be on Netflix, you know? And to us, I think having the experience of this, you know, I have this, you know, piece of media that I like, and it's mine and it's here, and I can watch it whenever or listen to it whenever, whatever the case may be. I think, you know, having stuff just like, oh, it's gone, you know, from Netflix or whatever, is kind of disconcerting, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to find a way to, like, I'm not really looking at the video aspect of it. I'm mostly just looking at the music and my iTunes and the podcast there. But I just want something where I can just put it and have it sit there and be, you
right.
know? And I think part of it is probably my age, you know?
Well, part of it is, in your case specifically, it is. I mean, I think that, you know, we're fortunate for the most part in that we're not so old that technology is like baffling. You know, like I love my mom. She's going to turn 70 this year. And, you know, she's got other concerns. I mean, she's legally blind like me, but worse. So there's other things to consider. But when she comes and house sits for us, you know, there's nothing, there's very little, unfortunately, for her to do, because, you know, we only get a few TV channels, and despite my abilities, you know, the things I've done over the years, you know, even before when we had a, like, one time she brought her own DVD player with, and I tried to make, you know, the process of explaining to her, okay, this is how you switch from the TV to the DVD player, and for most of us, that's something we can probably work out, even if we're using a TV set we've never used before. But that's because you have to you kind of have to have that base understanding of how the technology works. And, you know, the older you are, the harder
it's
it is
still hard
to
get Amanda to
pick that up.
Know how to do that.
So,
well, there's stuff I don't do. Like, I don't know how to use the Apple TV, you know?
So that's why I got it, like, a used Harmony, so all you have to do is press watch TV and it goes to the right channel.
Yeah.
And then the right
you know, it was funny. I saw this thing that was kind of funny that somebody posted on Facebook, and it was you know, fixing the remote control for grandma, and someone had taken, you know, the TV remote, and they had put masking tape over everything except the power button, the channel button, and the volume button.
Hello?
Because, you know, it was just like that was what, you know, jokingly, maybe, but that was, you know, kind of what they were saying, that there's all these extraneous buttons on there and some people don't want those. And I think that with technology in general, you know, people kind of get overwhelmed by options when, if they would just learn how to use it and realize they can ignore all those options, then they'd still be fine. So,
well, I think with me, the problem is, and this goes back to what I was saying, every time iTunes changes or another, you know, piece of software changes, I have to relearn it. I have a tendency to, if I learn how to do something, even if it's just like, I don't know, like make coffee or something, if it's, you know, my little coffee maker and I know how to do it and I've done it a bunch of times, I'll know how to do it and it'll be fine. Now, if I stop for a month for some reason, now I have to relearn it again. It's like this with everything. And, you know, I know how to drive to certain places. If I don't drive to those places for a very long time, I will not remember the slightest idea of how to get from point A to point B. So I think, like, you know, if I learned how to use the Apple TV and all of this, I would either need to go and, you know, press all the appropriate buttons on a pretty much daily basis for about 2 weeks in order to get that, you know, to be something I can do. And then if I stop, I'm going to need written directions for the next time around, is what I've learned. So, I mean, I will write notes to myself about do this, do that. So it, you know, is something I can process. But I don't know. I can relate to people that are older that don't know how to do these things because this is where I'm at.
You know, I've always had just a, I have a lot of empathy for people because for me, I mean, I guess maybe as, you know, a legally blind person who's always having to adapt to the world, I don't expect things to work for me. So I'm kind of super engrossed in learning how they work so I can understand how they work. And then that allows me to maybe teach them a little better or help other people adapt to them for their needs. I can see a few steps ahead of where their thinking is to try to help them make it work for them. But I do think that, you know, we run into this problem now where there's just all these controls, all these options, and for the most part, you don't need any of them. But people kind of go into this panic state where they just kind of freeze up and go, this is too much for me. You know, please give me my old thing that I understood how to use.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Well, so. I can relate to that.
Gets mad at me if I left it on the Apple TV or something. I just want to watch the stupid TV.
See, I'm not that bad, but that's probably because I know Sean can do all the stuff and I just let him. Here, do the stuff. I don't have to worry about it. And then I don't have to worry about, like, okay, I haven't watched TV in a week because I've been busy this week doing other, you know, podcasts and writing and all of this stuff. Or I've been sick and sleeping a lot or both. You know, I spend a week without hitting the right buttons. I don't know how to do it anymore. You know, and that's just me. That's not, I don't think everybody's experience, but like I said, I'm like this with real world stuff too. Like, I do not know how to use the coffee maker now because it's not a regular coffee maker. It's one of those with the little pods you put in, or the little K-cups. It's a K-cup, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how to do this. I've seen him do it 100 times. He's explained it a few times. I can't get it to stick in my head, you know?
Well, then, you know, what we need to do is we need to start
writing it down.
Well, writing it down and having you, you know, do it over and over and over again until it starts to stick a little bit.
Right. But I still have to write it down because if I don't do it, this is my whole life is like this. Yeah. So this is why I am so frustrated with iTunes changing all the time and moving my stuff. You know?
Yeah. This reminds me of when years ago when Jen got that eMac, one of the things we did was we gave her her first ever external hard drive.
Right.
And it didn't have, it wasn't smart enough to power down when the computer would turn off. And I didn't like that, you know, she would power down the computer and the external drive would be running all day and all night. And I told her, you know, well, you need to shut this down, but you've got to do it in a certain order or the computer will get upset. And then you need to turn it on. You need to make sure you turn it back on. And she went, well, there's too many options here. I'll never get it all. So I made her a graphic and it was, you know, and I made it like this. So when the sun was out, this would indicate that this was her getting up and going to her computer. When the sun was out, it was, turn the computer on and then turn the drive on, or no, turn the drive on and then turn the computer on. And then when there was a moon to show that it was nighttime and presumably she was shutting down the computer for the day and herself for that matter, then it was turn the computer off first and turn the drive off.
Yeah. And it was literally drawn. It wasn't like written out. It was drawn here's a box of the computer and here's a box that says, you know, external drive.
It was my really bad, it was my really bad, artwork
But you know, it worked.
Approximating, you know, sort of what you see when you're on an airline and they have those
the simplified little
instructions
things.
Kind of explaining to you what to do in the case of whatever event. So
right, but this is the kind of map I need for everything in my life. You know, I'm surprised I get anything done considering, but somehow, you know. So, I mean, I think that's why I'm having the big problem with iTunes is it just keeps moving and changing and I can't keep up.
All right. Well, before we go on to the next thing, I want to say real quick, another huge thanks to Nathan. Earlier today, he sent in his artistic rendering of The Phantom of Power.
Oh, awesome. So, I haven't seen it yet. Yeah, I'll have to look for that.
It's on the Hypernonsense Twitter account at Hypernonsense. You can look for it there. So we now have Electric Man, Undervolt, and The Phantom of Power.
Awesome. I can start a comic book now.
I feel like I need to learn, you know, an animation program so we can start to, you know, flesh out this world a little more and send them on some adventures. But
yeah, right before I got on, I started writing something out.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
Oh, that's finally. So awesome. That's so
finally,
awesome.
we're having our first real a spinoff from our podcast. This is very exciting. So Nathan, I want to ask you about your music now. Is trumpet? Would you consider trumpet to be your primary instrument? Trombone. Sorry, I should.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huge difference there. Huge difference there. I got the trum part right. Yeah. But do you consider trombone to be your main instrument?
Yes, I've been playing since sixth grade.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, that would be 2 years then. Just speaking of grades, I started playing guitar in eighth grade. So you've been playing the trombone longer than I've been playing the guitar.
Wait, I think we probably talked about this before. I'm more of a reader. I always have been, ever since I learned to play, I've been reading music, and the playing by ear part has gone a little bit by the wayside. It's something I've been trying to improve on little by little.
Yeah, you know, it's funny with all that stuff. I mean, in my case, mostly because of my vision, sight reading has really never been an option. I mean, I can read music and I know, for the most part, how to translate it, if you will, to the guitar. I have to do the processing. You know, I have to look at it and go, okay, I know what that note is. And I have to kind of think about where it goes on the guitar. Even if it was, you know, even if I had a wonderful rendering of sheet music that was as big as my iMac display and I could see it and it was moving in perfect time, I wouldn't be able to sit there and you know, I don't have that kind
That's
of recollection. One of the nice things though about playing the guitar is there is tablature I could probably do, because I wouldn't have to go through that processing step of taking the notes on the staff and having my brain correlate where they are on the guitar. I would just see, you know, numbers and know, okay, that's the fret. So, but obviously, well, non-fretted instruments don't really have that. So,
well, I've been trying to learn a little bit the guitar. I got an acoustic for my birthday, and I'm about maybe four or five chords under my belt now.
Okay. Well, you know, I can help you out with that if you want. I'd be happy to give you some lessons over FaceTime or whatever, if that's something you want to do.
Yeah, sure.
But what? I mean, I know. Tell us about the band that you're playing with. It is a.
It's a called the Helotes Area Community Band. It's I didn't join it when it started. It's apparently it started maybe like 10, 15 people, and now we're up to 60 or 70 people.
Wow.
It's a full concert band. Not orchestra, so no strings, but it has everything from the flutes, bassoons, oboes, clarinets, the woodwinds, then the French horn, trumpet, trombone. Got a lot of trombone players in there. I think we have about eight now.
Wow.
Oh, wow. That's great.
We're working on we're in the spring now, so we're working on our spring concert in April, and we've also been invited to play at the Texas State Capitol Rotunda in Austin.
Oh, that'll be neat.
Yeah, on March 6th, so that'll be fun. And it's a good group. the director has a mix of the classical, some a little bit more modern stuff, and it's mostly band repertoire, everything from marches to we've been doing some pasodobles. One of the ones we're working on now is a band arrangement of Peter and the Wolf.
Oh, wow. That'd be fun. I don't think I've heard that in a long time. Other than, you know, the orchestra that was playing it for a production.
Now, with that whole thing with this band, do you have to do anything, you know, in preparation? I mean, do you rehearse before you go, or just because you can handle it from sheet music?
Our rehearsals are every Monday night.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking more along your own lines.
Yeah, if it's a particularly hard music, I'll practice on my own.
Okay. Because I've always wondered that with, you know, situations where you've got, where you're competent with reading sheet music, and, you know, in my case, since I'm not, and of course I've only ever really played in rock bands, which is a whole other thing.
Well, there's some pretty fast, like 16th note runs and things like that, that we don't usually play. That if we have that, I have to practice. And then if I have a solo part, like I had one year, I have to do a couple measures solo. I'll definitely practice that. And high notes, which I'm not as used to playing, I'll have to work on that too.
Okay. Well, the other thing that I am wondering with that experience is, now, what would you say so far as a concert goes, is the most other, you know, musicians you've played with at once? Do you have an idea? I mean, 20 players,
yeah,
or have you had,
70.
So you've had that many players at one time?
Yes. Okay. I was a music major in college, so I played in all the bands there. Well, the marching band's probably the ones that has the most members, probably into the hundreds.
Yeah. I've always wondered what that experience must be like, to be in a group that's just so large. I mean, it's so mind-boggling to me because, I mean, I've played in, you know, 3- and 4-piece rock bands. And I always thought, you know, the pinnacle of that would be when you see those, you see it where bands, you know, would go out with, you know, any kind of backing section, you know, backup singers or a horn section or anything that sort of expands that simple, you know, 4- or 5-piece ensemble that a rock band usually comprises. And I would always look at that and go, God, that must be so much fun. But then I think about in your case where, you know, you're talking about dozens of instruments. It must be a very powerful experience when you're in the middle of all that.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I'll have to send you a recording of one of our spring concerts because you might enjoy it. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I would love to hear that.
So the only way I can relate to this is I could read music. I was in choir and chorus and all that all up through high school. And then when I hit college, I didn't feel like my voice was quite, you know, good enough to make the college stuff. So I didn't try. And I don't know, I guess I kind of lost interest. But there were times in middle school and in high school where different school districts from across the state, and this was in Illinois, we're all learning the same music at the same time. And then we all came together in a gymnasium in some school and rehearsed together for about a week. You know, we'd be going to that, you know, three, 4 days a week to rehearse. And then, I mean, it was, we filled the gym with just people that were in the choir.
I forgot about those things.
Yeah. And so we did those and we didn't know anyone other than the kids from our school. And we would go and rehearse those songs. And then we would break for lunch and use whatever the school was in their cafeteria. And then we would go back in and rehearse some more. And we did this for 3 or 4 days. And then we did it, I think it was Monday through Friday we were in doing this. And then on Friday, after we'd done the rehearsal and, you know, tightened up little bits here and there, we had the actual, you know, performance. And we were all still in the gym because there were so many of us. And they had, like, I think they put chairs for parents on the gymnasium floor to, you know, people to come in and listen. But you're in this massive crowd, you know, of people that are all singing. And they divided us by, you know, soprano, alto, that whole thing. And it was, that was probably the biggest group I ever did, you know, choral stuff with. And
yeah, that reminds me. I forgot about all that stuff. Every year in San Antonio, we have this yearly thing in April called Fiesta. And it's like a big party for the whole town. And one of the things they do for high school bands is called Battle of the Bands. And at one of the high school stadiums, they have like all the bands go around the track in a parade. Then all of the bands are in the middle on the football field, covering the whole football field, and all playing at once.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's pretty neat.
Things
that's
like Deep in the Heart of Texas. And
well, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
The only other thing I know, my sister was in marching bands, like within high school and outside of it. She was in some marching bands that competed over the summer when she was in high school. So yeah, she was traveling with the band in like a way that I think is probably unique, you know? And there were like 100 some people in her band alone, you know? And when
I like the playing part of marching band. I hated football though. I still hate football.
You know, she kind of liked football. She, you know, she's a Bears fan. She's in Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
And a big Bears fan. And, so she was kind of into the football, but she was in Illinois. There used to be, and I don't think there still is, there was a marching band called the Dundee Scots from Dundee, Illinois, and she played the bagpipes. And so that was her band. You know, she could play the bagpipes in that band, and that was what they were known for. You know, the band members' uniform consisted with, you know, they had kilts and all that stuff, and played some Scottish stuff and some other stuff, and competed over the summers and traveled, you know, between Illinois and Wisconsin and Michigan, and, you know, did all that. And one year, after she was an adult and was still performing in these types of bands, a different one, her band got invited to go to compete in Ireland at a huge band competition, a huge pipe band, marching band kind of competition.
Wow.
And so the whole band went and brought their family members, and I was able to go with for that. So I was not exactly traveling with the band completely, but I was kind of involved, and it was really interesting. Like, I got to go and watch all these bands compete, and I think that was the largest amount of bagpipe players I've ever seen in one place.
Yeah, I could only imagine. I know I did see Jen's sister's bagpipe band once in Illinois, and someone's calling me on FaceTime.
Well, that's a strange thing to have happened.
Let me decline that call.
At least it makes a pretty noise and it's not annoying, you know? It could be just this horrible ringing sound and like the phone before, I guess, you know?
Right.
You're just super popular today, Sean. Everyone must talk to you.
It just can't be, it can't be helped. I am the most popular person around. So we're at about the 90-minute mark, which is usually where we try to cut off the show. I don't know if there was really anything else. You know, we didn't exactly have a big agenda here. We just wanted to have Nathan on the show. So, Nathan, was there anything else you wanted to?
Well, I appreciate it. It was fun. Thank
you. Yeah. Jen, was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
I think we got everything. It was just really nice to talk with you again, Nathan, on a podcast.
And I'm not talking to the radio.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. You can, you know, you can take a break when this one, you know, lands in your podcast player. You can skip to the next thing. So with that, we'll say thanks, everyone, for listening. Nathan, if you could just tell our audience real quick where they might be able to find you online, anywhere you'd care to plug.
All right. Well, the main website you can go to is lotsthoughts.com. That's with two T's, LOTTSTHOUGHTS.com. And a new one for my MacApple group that you can find all my videos is MacAppleUsers.com.
All right. Well, thanks, and don't hang up yet, Nathan.
I'm not.
But we'll call that the end of the show. And our outro music, by the way, was created by Nathan. So thanks again to Nathan for that. And you can find us online at hypernonsense.com. It's the number one website of choice for millions of people across the United States and the world. And by that, I mean pretty much no one goes there. You can find us on Twitter at hypernonsense. You can email us show@hypernonsense.com. and we will most likely read your email on the show. Why? Because we don't get a lot of emails. So pretty much by default, if you want your comments to be read on the show, send them in. So, and then there will be, and I'm hearing weird Skype noises.
Yeah, someone else is, it sounds like a Skype noise, like someone in your contacts has gotten on and possibly wants to talk to you, so.
Yeah.
Very popular today.
So, anyway, you can not find us on Skype. You cannot find us on FaceTime. You cannot find us on the phone.
Although people are trying
but
today.
Apparently.
Hard to do so.
Apparently, you actually can.
Yeah.
Because everyone is.
Right.
So, you can go to hypernonsense.com/iTunes. You can subscribe to iTunes through that link, or you can leave us a review. We'd love to see some more reviews, and we will track those down and read those on the show as well. Good, bad, indifferent. We want all your reviews, all of them. And I know we've had more than, 8 or 9 downloads, whatever. I think we've had 6 or 7 reviews, so at least 2 or 3 people out there haven't reviewed the show yet, so... you're on notice.
One of them's probably me.
You can go to hypernonsense.com/support if you'd like to help out. PayPal, Square, and Patreon links are all there. Bitcoin, we've never gotten a Bitcoin donation, so that would be fun.
We've definitely announced that. That would be exciting.
And, there's ways you can support the show that don't cost money, and they're all there, and we'd love for you to do it. So with that, I think we'll end the show. And I just remembered that I said I was going to read the names of people who donated through our GoFundMe, so we'll actually save that for the next show. And anyway, if you did donate to that and you're listening, thank you.
We really appreciate that. That was helpful.
So with that, we'll be done. Thanks, everybody. And with any luck, we'll be back with you next week.
Bye, people.